Thank you very much for the opportunity to be in Provo. First of all, I would like to thank the organizers of this event for this outstanding event, because it's really breathtaking what's going on here. Very well organized. I mean, it's unbelievable. I would like to have the infrastructure that I can see here in my own university. I hope that one day will be like you guys. The topic is religious verification in Australia, and it's about the lack of, if I can say, freedom, because the idea of verification can be quite complicated. And I'm going to explain what's going on in Australia, and I don't know if I have how many. I have 50 minutes only, 50 minutes. So that's not going to be very easy. He's giving me 20. That's good. Thanks for your generosity. And so the article here that I have prepared, I cannot really read the whole thing. It's 50 pages. And so you have to read this later. But it's about the weakness of the argument that verification laws will necessarily promote tolerance. By verification law, I mean religious hate crime legislation that has been enacted by, for instance, the government in Victoria. My argument is that this kind of verification is actually providing for more disharmony than harmony. And it's actually a weapon that can be used by intolerance to use this as an instrument of persecution. Persecution of those who don't agree with their more, even perhaps more radical positions. I believe the verification law in Australia is based on a postmodern understanding, and it has affected, for instance, deeply the lives of some of those involved with litigation as a result of the verification law. One of the most well-known cases is the case of the two pastors in Victoria who were sued by two Muslims who actually attended a Christian event comparing the Quran with the Bible. But the point is that these people had not been invited to attend the event. The event was an event for Christians, and they didn't disclose their identity. And that was used on the instigation of the government, because the government told them to be infiltrated in this meeting, not revealing their identity, taking notes, just to feel offended. And the legislation doesn't say even that the truth cannot be used, quite otherwise. The truth cannot be used as a defense. And to make it worse, the law also says that the onus of the proof is inverted. So it starts from the presupposition that you are guilty, and you cannot use the truth as a defense. So that's a bit hard, really, in this case, to be safe here. As a matter of fact, truth should be regarded as a defense. It has always been regarded as a defense. I contend that the fact that the legislation says very clearly that the truth cannot be used as a defense, it's because they claim, these people, that after all, religion is just for stupid people. So you'll be discussing religion, things like that. It's better to silence religious debate. What they didn't realize is that the law was also a push by the Islamic Council of Victoria, and it has been used as a kind of blasphemy law by stealth. Because, of course, the Islamic Council of Victoria has been using the legislation as an instrument of persecution. It's quite clear that I can see that the law can be hijacked by radicals, by bigots, to claim that rather their ideas being attacked, it's that they themselves have been attacked. Because there is no difference here, since the truth cannot be used as a defense, there is no distinction here between people and their ideas. So people might feel offended and need water. Just a second. Thank you. I hope I'm not going too fast. At least I'm speaking in English. That helps. Imagine if it were in Portuguese. But basically, another problem that I see with this kind of legislation is the fact that it is mixing two issues here. One is religion and the other is race. I contend that people cannot, unless you are Michael Jackson, You cannot change so easily the color of your skin. So I think it's wrong to be, racism is always bad and wrong. But I don't think religion should be protected in terms of we having the right to be engaged in a debate. All religions have good and bad things. My religion, I discuss my religion all the time. I think we should be free to discuss this comfortably. And in Victoria, when they enacted this legislation, I wrote a paper in a local newspaper saying that I thought that this was very dangerous because people would feel afraid of the debating religious issues on the grounds that they could be sued, they could be accused of vilifying a religion or things of this sort. So the result of this is that people feel quite uncomfortable to be discussing religion in Victoria, for instance, because I have heard of people, from people that some religious groups are actually attending meetings of other groups and taking notes to see if they can find something that would be used for the purposes of, for instance, laying charges against this other group. I don't know what's happening with my voice. Sorry for that. So I have mentioned that I believe that race and religion are different things. I mentioned the fact that there is an inversion of the onus of the proof, that motive and truth are irrelevant, according to the legislation. And then you have this very strange case of the two pastors in Victoria, Pastor Daniel Alaya and Daniel Scott. And basically, this was the seminar comparing Islam with the Bible. And Pastor Scott and Alaya had actually lived in Islamic countries under Sharia law. And they were brought on charges of vilification by these two Muslims who attended this meeting. And the interesting aspect of this case is that Judge Higgins accepted all the expert opinions of the accusers, and the defendants had their witnesses basically rejected by the judge. And the judge basically gave an interpretation really quite liberal of the Islamic religion, saying things that, for instance, the Quran should never be interpreted literally, and nobody interprets the Quran literally. Perhaps he has not been introduced to some terrorists who would think very different. But basically, he took this liberal approach to the interpretation of Islam. And then he condemned these two pastors to pay an amount of about $100,000. They had to apologize, publishing an apology in the newspaper. The fact is that the judge also accused them of doing things that they didn't. For instance, the pastor said on one occasion that Muhammad had received the visit of jinns, which is like spirits, and he had converted them. The judge claimed that this pastor had called the Muslims demons. It was not what he said. So actually distorted what the judge basically distorted what these two pastors had said. And at one moment, he was quoting from the Quran, and he was prevented by the judge because it would be vilification to quote from the document. So he was forbidden to actually use the Quran to defend himself from the accusation of vilification. The religious vilification law, in this sense, can be used as a form of blasphemy law. It's very clear that what these people wanted is to avoid any criticism of the religion. It is the fact that it is a crime of apostasy in Islamic countries to criticize the Islamic religion. You don't have this in the West, but radical groups can actually use the vilification law for a similar purpose. Nobody's going to get killed, but the cost of litigation is very high. For instance, these pastors spent an amount of $150,000 to defend themselves In the end of the day, the decision was so outrageous and so bad, they were found to be guilty, that they appealed naturally. And the Supreme Court of Victoria said that the decision was so terribly done that deserved to be returned to the first level jurisdiction. Went back to the tribunal again. And at this point, the whole thing had very much backfired, even for the plaintiffs, because it became such a scandal that they entered in a kind of negotiation to stop the litigation. But the legal costs were not, they had to pay for the lawyers and all these things, so they spent about $150,000. I contend that if you spend $150,000 and you're found to be innocent, you will still feel quite depressed. It's $150,000 anyway. It could be even more if the whole thing went ahead to, and they had continued the process of litigation. And I also believe that the point is that, and that I cannot see here in my papers, and so it doesn't really matter to be looking at this. I'll try to explain that. I believe that's based on a postmodern approach of the truth. Because on one hand, we had this Islamic community, the Islamic Council of Victoria, pushing for Sharia law by stealth, anti-vilification law. And I call it Sharia law by stealth. But the left, basically, the government in Victoria was trying to prevent the discussions about religion on the grounds that this would be a threat to their multicultural democracy. So multicultural democracy, in my opinion, according to their perception of reality, means that moral relativism and cultural relativism, that's, it's not right for us to criticize cultural religion because everything is relative. So there is no objective truth, there is no objective right. So if you do that, you are causing disturbance. You are a troublemaker, basically. One of the questions made to the pastor is whether he, I have how many now? 10 minutes? 5 minutes? 5 minutes. Was whether he agreed with the assumption or presupposition that Islam and Christianity are basically the same. And he said no. He dared to say no. I don't think they are the same. And that was used as an evidence that he was a radical, an extremist. The judge agreed with a comment by one of the witnesses that evangelical Pentecostals, better saying, are the equivalent of Wahhabi Muslims because they are as radical as Wahhabi Muslims, those who are connected with Saudi Arabia, basically claiming that these people, just because they are weird, walker, they pray in tongues, do some things that are quite different. They are a danger for the society as much as the sect connected with Saudi Arabia, the Wahhabi group. And in a certain sense, during this whole trial, I feel that the judge vilified quite a lot the two pastors. I actually believe that the judge himself committed the crime of vilification because he was really extremely biased and rude. I'm not accusing him of being biased, even though he was appointed by the government which passed the legislation. Even though he rejected all the witnesses for the defendants, it's just a mere coincidence. And another thing is that this idea of preventing discussion on religion, it's based indeed on the fact that we have these different cultures and we should celebrate the different cultures. And we cannot say anything bad about the different cultures. We can only say things bad, really bad, about our own culture. The only culture that you can criticize is the Western culture, because that is allowable. But the others, and everything is fine, everything is perfect. And you had this terrible situation that people really feel afraid of discussing serious issues. I'm not saying here that the High Court, you have the courage to do so. But I have the courage to say that it is unconstitutional, this kind of legislation, because it violates, in Australia, the constitutional right to political communication. The High Court has found in the Constitution, implied right to political communication. And basically what these two pastors were doing to discuss politics. Because normally when you talk about religion, you talk about many things. I mean, you talk about whether your religion or another religion would be good or bad. And that is about the common good. And depending on the religion, because some religions can have a very political content, some religions are more than just religion in a narrow sense. They are religion in a political sense as well. They have a political component. Every time you discuss this kind of issue, you end up discussing politics too. And the High Court of Australia, which is like the Supreme Court of the United States, has already said on many occasions that we have in Australia the implied right to political communication. And I contend that this should have been applied in this, not only in this context, but I think that in generally speaking, the protection that is afforded to political speech, which is not religion, should be extended to political speech, which is religious. What's the difference between them? I listen to things said by politicians which has no religious content that I believe can be even more offensive than a speech, a political speech based on religious ideas. See, if you think that the political speech, not religious, is protected by the implied right, we should have the same protection for religious speech based on political ideas, or political ideas derived from religious concepts and ideas. So that's why I think and I claim that this kind of legislation can actually be, in my opinion, regarded as invalid from a constitutional point of view. I will just finish, if I have time, with a conclusion. Of the alleged objectives of religious vilification laws, is one of the objectives is to promote a harmonious and tolerant society. But rather than promoting real tolerance among the different religious groups, these laws have emphasized division and promoted victimhood among these different groups. They have incited interreligious strife and community tension by criminalizing truth-telling and restricting freedom of speech, which is a cardinal precept of every open and democratic society. Ultimately, vilification laws make the government and its secular courts complicit in a process of legal silencing undertaken by rival minority groups, engaging them in debates of truth and falsehood, good and evil. The court decides essentially theological questions in the process of finding incitement to hatred against persons. In general terms, vilification laws that make it a crime to voice comments deemed offensive to a religious group create undue fear and intimidation on people who wish to freely express their ideas and opinions. Such laws constituted a frontal attack on freedom of speech and freedom of expression, and this is why so many people in Australia seem quite reluctant to join public moral debate or conversation, seeming to fear what others and even their own government might have to say or do in return. This is the tragedy of the so-called multicultural democracy, which has embraced moral relativism and allowed the state to enact legislation that effectively prevents the citizens to speak more openly and freely about fundamental issues of public morality. As explained, there is no apparent reason as to why speech about religious matters should not simultaneously be characterized as political communication for the purposes of the right to freedom of political communication implied in the Australian Constitution and recognized by the High Court. Accordingly, religious vilification laws, such as the Victorian Racial and Religious Tolerance Act, unreasonably compromise the constitutional right to freedom of political communication, which is, Indeed, a basic right of the citizen as derived from our system, democratic system of government and implied in the Australian Constitution. Thank you very much. Thank you.